And so his first section here, he entitles, "Is there a problem of evil and is there an answer?" So in this chapter, he tells us that we will consider what is perhaps the most serious and cogent objection that unbelievers have brought against Christian theism, the problem of evil. And he gives us a typical formulation of it as, and he lays it out here with premises and a conclusion.
Right. Right. So he gives us the kind of breakdown here. He says, premise one, if God were all powerful, then he would be able to prevent evil. Premise two, if God were all good, he would desire to prevent evil. Premise three, so if God were both all powerful and all good, there would be no evil. Premise four is, but there is evil. Oh no, what do? We have to conclude, therefore, that there is no all-powerful, all-good God. And this is a standard reply that's been going on for hundreds of years now. And like all things that we should learn about from church history, is there have been answers that have been given to this, but people are failing to learn to look back more than 5 minutes in history and discover these things. But that's what we're here for. That's what Revived Thoughts podcast is helping with, and hopefully we can take a cue from them as well.
Right. And he calls this kind of layout here with premises and conclusions. You know, God is all powerful and he could prevent it, and he's all good and he should not desire it. But since there is evil, then perhaps this kind of God doesn't exist. He calls this layout the philosopher's way of looking at the problem. He says the essence of it is a concern to non-philosophers, though, as well. You know, those who, he says, which one of us have not cried out, "Why, Lord," when beset by tragedies in our experience, right? So it's more than just the philosophical perspective. Every Christian, in fact, he says, has at least wondered about this particular issue. And many have experienced periods of doubt as a result of this issue of evil. So this is a serious problem, and he wants us to understand the seriousness of it. I'd say it's probably the major objection to Christianity.
Right. And it's something we see even in scripture as well. So it's not something that's devoid in our literature as well. All right. So he goes on to say that in Alvin Plantinga's In God, Freedom and Evil, the book that Plantinga wrote here, it makes a useful distinction between a defense and a theodicy. In fact, one of our most visited videos that we covered when we did What About Evil is just that, as well as the difference between a defense and a theodicy. But here he quotes Plantinga as saying the later, which is the theodicy, has the goal of justifying God's ways to men, of demonstrating the goodness of all his actions. But the former, that is defense, is that it merely seeks to show that the problem of evil does not disprove the God of the Bible. So those are the kind of the two distinctions there between what a theodicy does and what a defense does.
Good. Another distinction that he says we should initially make is between natural and moral evil. So the former here includes anything that brings suffering and unpleasantness or difficulty into the lives of creatures, right? That's natural evil. So earthquakes and floods and diseases and injuries and death are examples of natural evil. Moral evil, though, is the sin of rational creatures, angels and men. And according to scripture, moral evil comes first. It came before natural evil. Satan's temptations and the disobedience of Adam and Eve led to God's curse on the earth, right? So there's this distinction here between natural and moral evil. Moral evil came first, and that led to a curse on the earth, which then provides for natural evil.
Right. And so it's different than what we see from kind of Greek mythology with Pandora opening the box. Again, women taking the blame once again for evil entering the world there. But throughout their writings, it's just here's an explanation for why there is evil in the world, but there's no culmination of that. There's no reason for it other than just here it is. The box held it, now the box doesn't hold it. But here in scripture, God is going to do away with it. There's a concluding chapter to the reason for this section, and the problem of evil is also flies. So here, God will remove the curse only on the final day, the consummation of Jesus' redemption. Scripture, therefore, gives us an explicit answer to the problem of natural evil. That is, natural evil is a curse brought on the world because of the moral evil, right? So Adam sins, and the curse spreads out from his actions, from the repercussions of his action. The world is upended in the entire universe, and we see thorns and thistles and destruction and death and animals eating each other and all those things that come about. It functions as punishment to the wicked and as a means of discipline for those who are righteous by God's grace. So the unanswered question is the problem of moral evil. How can sin exist in a theistic universe? And he says that he'll focus on the moral evil for the rest of this chapter and the next. So he kind of gives himself an out, but also where Christensen had a 350-page book to cover everything, we're given a frame two chapters. So
right, yeah. So we have an answer then, he suggests here, to the issue of natural evil. It's a result of moral evil and the curse that came from God. So we can put that one aside, is what he suggests here, and just focus and concentrate now on moral evil.